Hi, everyone. How's everybody doing? We're in the home stretch of the day, but that means this is the best part. Have you all had your coffee? Is everybody awake? Good, because we have a very exciting panel planned for you this afternoon, all about the most important topic, which is marketing. Because if you make the best trips and no one buys them, does anyone ever hear that tree fall in the forest? It was a joke. Come on, you guys. All right, so I'm Lauren Summers. I'm the director of marketing for Visit Wales. I'm not going to talk about Wales at all. Instead, I'm going to talk with a very distinguished panel of folks who I think we're extremely lucky to have here sharing their opinions and their expertise. And we are going to talk all about marketing and PR and media and how to make the most of it. In case you wanted to know what room you're in, make sure you're in the right room. We are in the, the Future of Marketing in Uncertain Times, Except the Future is Now panel, okay? And I'm gonna introduce our panel. On the far, my far left here is Al Mershon, who is partner at Myriad Marketing. In the middle, we have Catherine Hamm, who got up at 3 a.m. from LA in her position as travel editor at the LA Times to be here with us today. So she is a road warrior. And closest to me, we have Jeff Welsh, who is the CEO of Mercury CSC, which is a travel marketing company. I'm gonna let them tell you a little bit more about themselves when they speak, but I also wanna know a little bit about you all and who's in the audience. Can I just get a show of hands of travel planners? So there's a lot of travel planners here. That's great. So a lot of people are going to want to know about alumni and affinity programs and how they market those programs. And then tour operators, it's about half and half. So the partners of the planners. And then people like me, destinations. There's Rachel, who works with me. And where are you from? Papua New Guinea, who works with Al, right? Yep. Exactly. Excellent. And any suppliers or other constituents in the room? What do you guys do?
We're an incoming operator in Brazil.
Incoming in Brazil?
Investment banking.
Investment banking, all right. I don't know if we can tell you how to market that, but we might try. And anybody else that I missed? We just want to make sure we address all the kinds of topics that people are interested in. Yeah? Okay, good. So without any further ado, I'm going to pass it to Jeff, who's going to start us off with a bit of an overview.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for having me here. I actually grew up in the St. Louis area, so I got to spend a little time visiting family this weekend before I got here. I live in Montana now, and I have a small marketing firm, and we really work, I like to say, at the confluence of travel and outdoor recreation. So we specialize in a market we call the adventurous. So they're people who are enthusiasts for both. So in the travel space, we tend to work with destinations or brands that are usually a little bit more rural or more outdoor oriented. And then we also work with brands like Orbis or Ex Officio, Vasque Footwear. So brands that are producing goods often for travelers to enjoy in the outdoors. And the this panel, it was created, I think, to talk a lot about tactics. And I'm always a little bit hesitant to talk about tactics right out of the gate because each of you is different. And you each are going to have a different target audience. And also, as you've heard many times, and you know yourselves, there's a zillion tactics out there now. It's not like it used to be. And you can't be everywhere at all times. You can't be all things to all people. So I wanted to give you kind of a framework that we use. It's our little process that we use to think through marketing campaigns. And that can be to think through an actual campaign or to think through your brand sort of writ large. We call this process IC, and it's a four-stage process. I'm just going to go through it fairly quickly, show you a couple of examples of each one, and then we'll go into the others here. But the first I stands for insights. And this is a very basic question, but it is always the first question you need to be asking yourselves. And I see it all the time. People always forget to just think about this. What do I know about my target audience? And I would challenge you to go further than just the basics, right? Demographics are kind of... that's like table stakes, right? You need to know, of course, their education, income, male, female, yada, yada, yada. But I would really encourage you to dig in deep into the why. What is it that makes people buy from you? Why do they care about you? My example here, this is from, we also do some work with brands that are related to the space. So the Wilderness Society, National Outdoor Leadership School, Nature Conservancy, things like that. But what we found here in this in the work we did for this brand is a lot of, this was a project we did for the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act. And they were looking to engage more people in with the Wilderness Society and to get more giving. And the conventional wisdom in that space is that people give money to save places, right? Save the whales, save this landscape, save, save, save. And when we went in and did a focus group, and again, we asked why. Why do you connect with an organization like the Wilderness Society? Why do you connect with wilderness? What we actually heard was, while that was a part of it, what people were more interested in was sharing and connecting with others who had their passion. So it wasn't so much about saving, it was about finding a community of other people who liked wilderness. And so that's what we built this campaign on, and then we went out and did some different tactics and found these influencers like Lance Bass and Madison Bumgarner and some others to then tell their stories and share and build a community around their love for wilderness. And that led to a lot higher engagement. So again, if you can dig deeper, I think you'll find some good insights that can help drive your campaign. So again, understand that why. Dig into those sort of deeper emotional needs. I had somebody explain it to me one time of, look, we know research tells us that our customer owns cats, but why do they own cats? That's kind of the hook there. So the second stage, story. So we know who we want to talk to. We think we know what's going to motivate them. But what is truly unique about what you do that's going to resonate with your target? And this, I can't emphasize enough how important this is. And this is has almost nothing to do with what I do as a marketer or what Al does as a marketer, right? We are the ones making the campaigns. This is about what product you're actually selling. And it is so important today, with all the transparency and the millions of channels, that what you do is actually differentiating and actually unique. It's product development. That's going to tell the story a lot better than any ad campaign can. We helped introduce this operator, UK travel operator, Audley, you might be familiar with them, to the United States a couple years ago. And they came into the space and they said, okay, where is the opportunity here? What's unique about what we do in the UK that we could maybe bring to the United States? And they looked at the opportunity and said, hey, there's nobody here who's really doing super personal, super customized travel for independent travelers, not for groups. And that was the space they saw. And this is just sort of a graphic representation of that. But that was the space they came in, and that's where they've been trying to play. I would actually say that I think it's really difficult for planners and operators to differentiate. A lot of what you offer is very similar. I think it's a real challenge in the travel space to differentiate. But you know, as I was thinking about this group, you know, what could you do to do that? I would encourage you to think about that. I went to the University of Missouri. I have a journalism degree from there. And I went through and looked at, is there anybody here from the University of Missouri? So I went through and looked at your travel offering. And frankly, I thought it was, you know, sort of similar to a lot of the other universities I looked at. But what if you could offer trips that were true to your brand, right? Missouri is known as a very good journalism school. That's, again, what my degree is. If you started to segment your trips based on the interests of the alumni, what if you could put together a journalism trip for journalism alumni like me, and you could get me into the White House press room, or you could get me into a tour of the China Daily in Beijing. You could get me into interviews or some kind of speeches if you came out to my neck of the woods near Yellowstone, and we went on a tour with some journalists there who covered some of the issues in Yellowstone, like bears or wolves. Those kind of, I think, unique product offerings have a lot of potential to differentiate yourself from some of the other offerings that are out there. So again, you know, there's a saying in marketing, the doing is the telling. And it is so much, so true today more than ever. It's going to, the way you build the product is going to do a lot more than what an ad campaign can ever do. And I think that Catherine will probably speak to that a little bit later. So third stage, you know who you want to talk to, what's going to resonate with them. You know what your story is, and hopefully that will make a connection. So how do you tell that story? How do you do it in a compelling way? And we've worked with the state of Montana for a number of years, and their brand promise, their story, is that Montana offers the most spectacular, unspoiled nature in the lower 48. And that's often represented by a lot of the megafauna that exists in Montana, so grizzly bears, elk, wolves, bison, and so forth. So this was a big budget campaign. This was a billboard that ran in Seattle, I think. And we could have shown this grizzly bear laying in a meadow or eating a trout or playing with cubs or, you know, but that's all pretty conventional imagery, stuff you might have seen before, stuff that's harder to stand out. When we saw this photo, we were like, wow, that is something different. A bear walking down the middle of a road in Montana. And so we put that on a 40-foot billboard. And again, how do you tell the story and do it in a way that stands out and is differentiating? And coupled with that line, Step Out of Bounds, was pretty successful. So, you know, again, the production quality. How are you choosing photos? How are you doing things to differentiate? Those things all matter. I know for planners, you don't necessarily have a lot of access to those things. You're probably relying on photos and things that maybe the operators give you. Even the operators might not have great access to imagery. But think about partnering. I mean, I know, you know, when we have worked with destination marketing organizations, they're creating content. Like, I mean, they don't, that's what they do is create content. And there's so much of it, I think a lot of them would be interested in partnering with you. And you just got to go talk to them about that.
I just want to jump in because I know sometimes people don't always know the acronym. So destination marketing organizations would be places like Papua New Guinea or Canada or some of the destinations that you see here, as opposed to your tour operators. So thinking about multiple partners in terms of getting content is what talking about, coming to us to ask for those images.
Yeah. So that's, you know, they're in the business of doing that stuff. So I would really encourage you to think how you can work with them to improve how you communicate. So the last step here is the engagement. So what are the media tactics you're going to employ? So again, you know who the target is, you know what the story is, you know how you want to tell it in an emotional way. Where do you actually run your campaigns? And again, there's thousands of channels now. So there's not one universal answer here. But I'm going to give you an example, and this is an example actually from an event. So this is a footwear brand, Vast Footwear, and they did an event at the GoPro Games. And I think some of you probably either go to events, or sometimes some of you I know host your own events for people who come and want to buy trips from you. And so many of the booths that you have and things, it's just, again, kind of a standard offering. And so what we did here is we created a very simple quiz that when people would come to the footwear booth, we just hand them an iPad. And it was like, take 30 seconds, fill out this quiz, and then you'll win a hat that shows what your spirit animal is. It was just this fun little thing. And so the quiz asked questions. It was just one, you just choose one thing or the other. So it was like steak or salad. Steak or salad or dirt or water, you know, those kind of choices. And so you'd go through five or six of these questions, and 30 seconds later it would say, oh, your spirit animal is a wolf, and you'd get this hat. Well, this was at the GoPro Games, like in Vail, and I think we gave away about 2,000 of these hats. I mean, you sort of couldn't go anywhere without seeing these hats. It was a great brand impression for Vask. And I just bring this up as an example. It's a narrow little tactic, but it's not very hard to do this stuff. You just got to spend the time thinking about it. Anybody could have written this quiz that we did, and anybody could design the hats, but you have to do it and execute and focus. So my advice here in engagement is to just try things. Step out a little bit and focus. Don't be afraid to fail. I will say that if you want to know the hot things right now, and Al can certainly speak to this, there's a lot of social video viewing is going through the roof, native advertising, using influencers to tell your story online, user-generated content. You could probably do a lot with email segmentation and automation. And if you have any questions about that, I'm happy to talk about what these things are. But, pick one or two and focus. And again, don't be afraid to fail. But I think you've got to get out and do those things, because if you're always kind of stuck doing what you've been doing for 20 years, you're going to be out of date pretty soon. So that's my sort of overall framework for you guys. I hope you can find it useful, and I'm going to let these guys take over, and I'm happy to answer any more questions.
Thanks, Jeff. My name is Catherine Hamm. I'm the travel editor for the Los Angeles Times. I've been with the Times for a while. I've found that experience is not necessarily a good thing these days, so my stock answer is I've been in the media longer than the iPhone has been in existence. I will tell you quietly, as you know, the iPhone just celebrated its 10th birthday. I've been in the business, the iPhone, times four. So I've spent a long time in travel. Came to the Times in 1999. This was my second go-round in travel. I had also worked for the Kansas City Star, so we've got a lot of Missouri going on here. For several years when I was travel editor, had left travel and then came and left and then come back. So when we talk about spirit animals, I think I'm the opposition party here. So if I had a spirit animal, it would be a porcupine, especially if you're somebody who's trying to get something into the media, something into the newspaper. So I want to, for a minute, talk about how we evaluate the material that we see. And we get a lot of it every day from destinations all over the world. We receive probably between 500 and 700 emails a day, and that is a lot to look at. But we're always on the lookout for great stories. So what is a great story? How do we find great stories? And some of this is as individual to the Los Angeles Times as we are unique. Some of it is applicable to all media. So when we are looking at what we're going to present to our readerships, we take into account what is our mission statement, and it really helps to have a little bit of familiarity with some of the organizations out there that you want to impress or influence. So our mission statement is we want to be the most vital source of news and information for the Southern California traveler, which sounds very simple, and yet it's hugely complicated. We know, for example, about our readership that they are absolutely in love with California and the West. I mean, if you ask them where they want a vacation, it's almost always someplace in the West if they're doing a car trip. But they're also completely in love with Europe, the big three, of course, London, Rome, Paris. Lately, they are incredibly smitten with Asia, and part of that has to do with price, which is a big driver for certain segments of our audience, especially leisure, and that's what I represent as a leisure traveler. So we know that they like those. We know that our print readership is quite different from our online readership. Our print readership is much like me. They tend to be a little bit older, except in one regard. They tend to be a little bit older. They tend to be empty nesters. They tend to be a little bit better educated. And this part is not like me. They tend to make a little bit more money. So our online reader is reading for information, tends to be a little bit younger, tends to be a little bit more adventuresome. But what both groups share and what part of our job is to help be the guardians of two limited resources, and that is time and money. So part of your job, besides knowing what it is that we want to tell our readers, is helping us help them make the most of their time and their money. And when you stop and think about it, even though people may be a little bit more affluent, they're also very, very interested in value. And time, of course, the thing we say about time is the only thing we truly own. Americans leave more vacation time on the table than just about any other people in the world. So we want people to get out there. We want them to be excited. We want them to find new things. So people ask me all the time, well, okay, so London, Paris, and Rome. So you've written about London, Paris, and Rome over and over and over again. And our job, as the world gets smaller and as people become more well-traveled, is how do you slice that pie more finely? And it goes to something that Jeff was saying about what is the uniqueness of the destination? What added value can you bring to that? Why would I go to London again? We have in Los Angeles a great fascination with the entertainment industry because that is the economic engine that drives Southern California for the most part, or Los Angeles for sure. We have a story coming up, for example, on all of the places in London, not all of them, but many of the places in London that have starred basically in motion pictures and TV. People love that in California. When you're walking around Los Angeles, you see these little yellow signs, which tells you, it's kind of a Southern California code for, we're shooting something here. And you'll see people, and people will stop in traffic. Well, they'll stop in traffic anyway just because they're dumb, but they'll stop in traffic to try to find out what's going on. So people have a real fascination with this. So that is slicing the pie more finely. Now, if you want to slice it even more finely, maybe you talk about London and only the places that have to do with royals. Maybe you talk about only where The Queen, the movie The Queen with Helen Mirren, was filmed. Maybe you talk about only about Downton Abbey in terms of Highclere Castle. Maybe you slice it that much more finely. But helping us find ways to make the familiar unfamiliar is something that we absolutely love, something that we really struggle with. And that's partly because where we live, we talk about Los Angeles as being the capital of the next big thing. And I think for a journalist or for any media organization, knowing what the trend is, knowing what people are looking for, what's the next thing that they can do that nobody else has done before? And I think, I'm going to use a word that I just told these guys we're not supposed to be using anymore, but I think this is unprecedented in that people are after bragging rights. Bragging rights have never been more important in travel than they are now, and that's the ability to come back and say, I did something that nobody else than your peer group has ever done. I went to fill in the blank, I did blank, I got to cook with Wolfgang Puck, or whatever it happens to be. So again, it goes to the uniqueness of the destination and what you can offer.
Great, thank you. I'm Al Mershon with Myriad Marketing. I too am from Missouri, as we found out the other night, another good reason to be here. And I actually spent, before getting into the marketing field, I spent 10 years in academia in both here and Los Angeles, so a little bit of a crossroads between the two. Jeff did a lot about strategy, as most typical ad agencies do, so I'm just going to talk about tactics here. But just as a way of background, our company, Myriad, which recently became part of the MMGY group, many of you know from their research and everything else, has a specialty in travel and tourism, and we work with a lot of airlines, a lot of cruise ships, tour operators, and also a number of destinations where we actually represent the international destination in the U.S. And I have to go through my list because I am a sales guy too, in case you need any help with Papua New Guinea, Dominica, Macau, Kenya, Kyoto, British Virgin Islands, Australia's Outback, Melbourne, Qatar, or Nicaragua. We can talk to you after that. And I love Jeff's IC part, because we too look at things in a four-step process. The first, like everybody else, is research. And I think one of the things, the challenge is people do research and then they stop and they apply everything, where the research nowadays has to be continual. And I agree 100%, it's about the insights. It's not the information, it's what can you glean from that information so you can plan accordingly. Once we do that, we start to deploy it and we look at the story and we look at the unique selling proposition. And I think the story is twofold. One of my best professors slapped my hand when I said we were supposed to express ourselves the best way we know how, and we're supposed to tell our story. And that's great in conversation, but it's awful in marketing. You don't need to express what you want to say. You need to express what you need to be heard. And so the trick is actually listening to your audience and understanding how your audience speaks and what your audience wants, and your stories about that. Quite frankly, I've heard so many tour operators, and we've worked with dozens of them over the years, when we ask what's their unique selling proposition and their story, 90% of them talk about their personalized service. Everybody talks about their personalized service. I bet if we did a survey here, a lot of you would say, that's what separates me from my competitor, and your competitor would say the same thing. You all do personalized service, I'm sure. Nobody's selling in blocks. So where's that next step? Where's that part that differentiates you? A lot of people look and say, how did I win all this business? And it's just important to say, how did I lose the business? Who got the business that I didn't get, and why was that? I think another big consideration is the difference between sales and marketing. And I think sometimes that area becomes really gray with tour operators, quite frankly. Marketing brings the horse to water. Sales makes it drink. And sometimes there's a disconnect between those two. Is the marketing bringing to the sales agent what they're supposed to be selling? Does the salesperson even know what marketing's going on and how it's being put out into the marketplace too? So a lot of times the marketing that we look at on the external side of things has to be evaluated from the internal side too to make sure that those things are in conjunction. When we talk about traditional marketing, I don't want to supersede a lot of Jeff's stuff because I think we're all on the same line on what we do. Every time we come to one of these sessions and somebody says, well, what's the one thing I need to do? Well, there is no one thing that you need to do. It's everything you need to do. And it is what we were talking about, the social marketing, the direct mail. And just a sideline, direct mail is far from dead, no what anybody says. Just to put things in perspective, out of all the mediums in the United States, from direct mail, television, internet, everything else, the number one by 45% is direct mail. There's a reason you open your mailbox and there's so much direct mail in there. The question is, what else did you do in your marketing to get the person excited about keeping that brochure, keeping that direct mail piece? Because in isolation, it doesn't work. Just like an email blast in isolation doesn't work. Just like a billboard in isolation doesn't work. It's all of it together. You know, the famous marketer John Wanamaker said, I know half my advertising's working. I just don't know which half. And that was true 50 years ago, and it's true today. You have to look at all the different things that you do. And that comes back to, once again, research. How many times have you gone to your consumer and asked what they want to receive, how they want to receive it, how often they want to receive it? When was the last time you asked them about their trip? Testimonials are not dead, they're alive. They're just in video and photography now. Not a little quote with a, saw how great their trip was, but a sharing of information. So I thought I'd throw a few things out just to start the conversation. But there is that cycle and that circle of all the different activities that you need to do to be successful. And we wish we could point out one and say that's the only reason that you need, or that's the only way you could move forward in marketing. But it is all those things. And we're in 100% alignment. It's all in the research and the continual research from your consumer and how you differentiate yourself with that consumer.
Great, thank you. Well, I think really good openings. I know one question that I imagine is going to be critical for a lot of people here is maybe an example or a case study, if each of you might have one, of everyone knows that the brochure for this constituency is really what works, or this is what I hear most often, but yet people are always sort of trying to get beyond the brochure. And so I wonder if the panelists might share an example of a case study of something that was innovative, out of the box, different. And in Catherine, in your case, maybe a pitch that you received that was really creative that put a destination or a trip on your top list of stories to cover.
This was so amazing to me, this particular campaign. This was right after the Second Intifada in Israel. And they, obviously, the Middle East is an interesting destination for us to cover because the shelf life for stories from the Middle East is about 20 seconds. We work very far in advance, so we'll have stuff on the schedule for 6 to 8 weeks out. And, of course, if something happens, then we have to yank it off. And that's not just man-made disasters. That's also natural disasters, so it makes it a little bit tricky. But the people who were marketing Israel, the tourism minister, came to us and not long after this, and they had developed this campaign that was brilliant. And some of you may remember this. This was right after 2000, and it was, I care and I'm going. And they marketed to churches and synagogues all across the United States, because really, who in that group does not want to go to Israel? And it appealed not only to the uniqueness of the destination, but it also allowed people to feel like they were heroes of this story, because they did care. They knew that in Israel, hotels were standing empty, that people were losing their jobs, that tour operators were suffering. They got to be the hero of that story, and it appealed to this very deep need, this very deep emotion, and a need to help people. And it worked. Tourism to Israel, despite the fact that there was a lot of trouble and a lot of bad publicity, rose significantly because they knew a market, they identified a market, they gave a compelling reason to go, they gave a lot of reassurances about people being safe, which was pretty amazing given that I believe during that second intifada, I think 67 tourists were killed. I mean, thousands of other people were killed, but 67 tourists were killed, and that was a big headline. And it was brilliant, and it worked.
I'll do one for direct mail. We have taken over the past with tour operators and tour companies the idea of the brochure and put that on the back rack and made magazines instead. A story about an itinerary is much more compelling than an itinerary. Itineraries look regimented. They look stiff. When someone comes back from their trip, they don't say, oh, on day three we did this, and day four we did that. Three paragraphs about going to the olive farm and having dinner with the family is much more compelling than what we'll do in the morning, afternoon, and evening. One of our major clients is Signature Travel Network. We do 14 magazines a year for them, each geared towards different audiences and based on the database of their past spend. So we know if we should be reaching them with a high-end or a medium magazine. We just redid the magazine for Princess Cruise Lines and changed what was traditionally a quarterly update on tours into a magazine. So there's two-page spread on which hats to wear on your cruise, but each hat is good for a different cruise. This one's good for the Latin American cruise, this one's great for the European cruise, and so on and so forth. So you're giving them information, A, that's useful, but B, more importantly, it allows them to think, what will their story be when they go? It allows that point of view not from us telling you what you're going to do every day, but from the traveler sharing what they did every day. So I think that type of storytelling is the part that allows me to keep that magazine in my house a lot longer than the brochure, which is on that critical, do I keep this or do I throw it in the trash? I'll read those stories later and has a longer shelf life, and we think is much more impactful.
Yeah, the hat thing sounds like the hat thing I showed to some degree.
Yeah.
You know, I think, I guess my example would be a campaign we did, it's been a little while now, it was like 2009, but it was during the recession, and so tourism was tanking. And so in Montana, our work for that destination, you know, it's a long-haul destination, right? It's not easy to get there. There's not a lot of flights, and if you want to drive, it's 10 hours from any big market. So we really had to kind of huddle and say, well, geez, how are we going to keep driving tourism here? So we looked at our drive market, our nearby drive market. So the Canadian provinces just north of us, and then the Dakotas, Wyoming, and Idaho. So basically within about a six-hour radius, and we try to come up with a way to target those groups. And so we came up with this idea, and I think it's interesting, and you probably have some of the same challenges. When you work with a public institution, it's like they want to like polish the edges off of anything, right? So that and that can be a real problem. And just an unwillingness to kind of stick their neck out. And somehow we got the destination to approve a line called Get Lost. And we created these bumper stickers that were in the cutout shape of Montana, and it just said "Get Lost," and then in small type it said "In Montana," and then there was a website. And so we made a website at the time. There wasn't a lot of travel information about the real under-the-ground places in Montana. At some level, I always say, you know, Montana's, in some parts, it's actually like a developing country. It really lacks the infrastructure that a lot of destinations have in some places. Some places are, you know, five-star. But there's a lot of places that are real, you're really going off the beaten path. So we created a website that users fed all that information into, and we just challenged people to do that, to go get lost. We figured that all the drive market knew about Yellowstone, they knew about Glacier, they knew about all those places, but did they know about Fort Peck Reservoir? Or, you know, I could go on and on about all the little off the beaten path towns. And anyway, this thing just took off. We ended up distributing, like, I think over 100,000 of these stickers. And you had residents buying it. And so then we had residents that were, like, telling the story for us. I was in Rome last fall, and I saw one of the stickers in a market in the Piazza Navona. So that's where it ultimately went, and that has been a successful thing over the years. Although the government did finally get nervous about it, and they killed it because they were afraid it was offending businesses to relocate or something like that. So...
But I think what's interesting about each of those stories is you talked in the beginning, Jeff, about really understanding who your client is. And what I heard in each example is a segmenting of the clients and thinking about, you know, these different types of levels that you have and different groups and constituents that we have within the member basis of the institutions represented here. And even within the databases, we talk a lot about how to parse your database. And so I think it's interesting to think about thinking through different messaging based on what you know about each segment in your group and sort of targeting some campaigns and activities towards each of them. And I think to that point, I wanted to ask about this topic of community, because that came up earlier. You talked about, Jeff, sharing and building communities around products and insights that you know about the community and tailoring the products to them. And I wanted to take it to social media and see if you guys might give some examples about how people here might engage their constituents using the community both as a way of channeling information out, but also as a way of getting insights and better understanding, you know, who their audiences are and how to reach them. Go for it.
I have a kind of a love-hate relationship with social media. This morning when I was sitting at LAX, the first Twitter message I had was, "Lunatic at large is now following you on Twitter." And I thought, happy Valentine's Day to you too. but I was telling Lauren as we were talking this morning, we can actually sit and watch what is getting eyeballs online at any given moment in real time. And it's really fascinating. It actually sort of distracts me sometimes from my regular work, but that is sort of my regular work. And we know, for example, when we tweet something, there may be 200 people on a story and suddenly it will be 250. One of the interesting things that's happened, though, at least in the travel part of the world over the last few years, is that when social media first began to explode on the scene, people talked a lot about, it was all about Twitter, 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 Twitter. And Facebook was for old people. Facebook was for grandmas so they could figure out what was going on with their grandchildren. Facebook was for people whose families lived across the country and they needed to, you know, check in on them. Facebook was not for travel. Well, I'm here to tell you today, Facebook is for travel. Facebook makes it really easy for travel because when you stop and think about it, travel is basically a visual medium. Travel relies a lot on visuals, and Facebook is very good with visuals. We can post fantastic pictures of a destination and people will really flock to that. Video, as I think you guys have mentioned, is also extremely important, but it needs to be the kind of video, it needs to be short, it can't be 5 minutes. It needs to be, oftentimes we do travel in a minute is what we call it. And you also need to be able to turn the sound off or turn it down. For those of us, not that I would ever do this, who are looking at video at work in their cubicles and shouldn't be, so that just in case somebody is listening, you know, you have the option of turning that off. But video is important, and both Facebook and Twitter, do accommodate those. The two others that are really important to us are Instagram and Pinterest. Because again, very visual, they allow us to tell our story visually. We have in the media needed to become better visual storytellers over the last, this is probably last 5 to 6 years where there's been this emphasis. And I am here to tell you that I never edited a piece of video in my life until 2 years ago, and I thought, you know, I really need to do this. So I taught myself. I am not a genius, and I'm not perfect. I use crummy PC programs. I can do it. Your phone, your iPhone, your smartphone makes it really easy. And as YouTube has shown us, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be watchable.
Oh, I guess my comment on social media is, you know, it can be really daunting, right? I mean, you look at it and it's like, oh, do I want to be on, do I need to be on Instagram or Facebook or Pinterest or, I mean, I could make a pretty good argument for being on LinkedIn if you're in the business you guys are in. So where, you know, where do you go and where do you put your energies? But it's just like, a form of media like anything else. And it's the beauty of it is you can target to the extreme. And that goes back to what we were saying about knowing your audience and what motivates them, and you know what are the behaviors that they have that are gonna that show them to have a high propensity to travel with you, because you can get down narrow, and that's a good thing. And so you know that would be my encouragement to you. And it's part of even thinking, you know, going back to thinking about your overall brand. You know, Al's went down the list of, he's a specialist, right? His company is a specialist in travel. And I talked about the specialty that we have, which is sort of part travel and part outdoors. And I just don't think you can be specialized enough in today's business environment. I don't. I think you could get a lot more narrow than many of you perhaps think you could. There's always the concern of, am I going to alienate my existing customers? But I think there's a way to do both. And anyway, social media is a way to, if you develop that specialty, to target more narrowly.
I just want to, the last thing you said is my little weakness nowadays is that nobody's being gutsy about what they do anymore. They're taking the middle road as much as they can. They're measuring every single thing. There's no guts, there's no glory. You know, campaigns are put out and just measured and then pulled off. We're afraid to say anything to everybody. I even notice nowadays, we don't even commit to telling someone to have a good evening or a good day. We just say, have a good one. So there has to be something that says we're taking a risk. Social media is a great opportunity to take that risk because it's fleeting. It's quick. I agree with Catherine 100%. We say all our social media should be dim sum. No big meals, just easy to pick up and choose. And you want someone to watch 5 minutes, great. Do 10, 30-second videos and show them what the next video is and the next video is, and they all want to make it personalized, so they'll just pick them each up. But we won't want to commit to 5 minutes, and then 12 minutes later, we leave the site. I think the interesting thing about social media is, and it relates to the conference here, whatever social media, and all of a sudden, there's an affinity towards that. If it's the Facebook friends that you have, if it's who you follow on Twitter, you feel like you're part of that affinity, which I think comes back to part of your question too. I think what happens with affinity marketers sometimes is we fall into this trap of thinking, well, this person's part of my affinity group, and we forget that they're also part of 20 other affinity groups. And going back to the they own cats part, what other affinity groups is your audience participating in? Because that'll help you define and potentially partner with other people to say, okay, now I really understand you. One of my concerns about the educational world and affinity groups and alumni is, as the market gets older, the distance between when they went to school and today gets bigger. And there's so many other companies who are vying for that same audience. Land Rover can sell trips. So you can travel somewhere and drive in a Land Rover. Now, the affinity to me and my Land Rover is incredibly strong as opposed to my university. My university was 1 year ago, and so I've lost that every year. But every morning I go in and I start my Land Rover. The other thing is Land Rover doesn't care if they make money from the trips. They only care that I buy another Land Rover. So now we're competing not with other universities, but what's going to make that affinity stronger after 20 years and 30 years and 40 years and after my kids have gone to another university and I'm watching their football games instead of my football games? How do I strengthen that? And it's better understanding that client. And maybe it is through social media, but it certainly is through research. And a lot of times social media, the other offshoot of it is, it's great research. You can go put things out in the marketplace, have people vote, have people give feedback. There's all sorts of tools like that, especially in a digital sense, that helps you. Just a sidelight on that, we've tested magazine and brochure covers digitally. Go to SurveyMonkey. You can ask 100 questions. You can have your audience pick the cover, and then they're involved in it. You can have them pick what kind of pictures. You can get a lot of feedback from them from that perspective, too.
Okay, I have lots of burning questions, but I want to hear from you all what your questions are. We have about a half an hour left, so I think we've got, you know, a good chunk of time to take your questions. Does anybody have any?
Okay, let's go, guys.
Okay. And then for, time for a beer.
You promised me you were still awake. Huh. All right, over here.
We have two. Is that okay?
Yes, but maybe one at a time.
Can we use a mic, please?
Yeah, the mic's coming. Right here in the front, second row.
Thanks, panel. Yep, Julie Schwartz, Oregon State University, 19 years in Missoula, Jeff.
So
I appreciate all the Montana references. Couple things for those of us at universities. I love taking risks and being a little edgier. I think it works. It cuts through the clutter, but I just can't change the culture to with the university, even internally, to get off the safe, more PC, more bureaucratic messaging. Is there anything we can do to help be edgier and cooler, frankly, in order to market better to our alumni? And then the other piece of that was, the only thing we have unique is our alumni. Can we leverage that affiliation? I think you mentioned maybe having some more sliced and diced trips towards graduates of a certain college, perhaps, but can we leverage that affiliation in a way that's not off-putting and might strengthen that bond?
I would encourage you to look at your offering first, more than your marketing, to be edgy or cool or whatever. They're buying the product, right? And so if your product is differentiating, that alone will, I mean, that makes marketing's job way easier. You don't need to really, you know, I mean, gimmicks and stuff like that, I mean, it's just, that's just not the way it works anymore, you know? It's not the Mad Men days. And if your university's fighting you on that, I don't know what to tell you. But, you know, as I alluded to earlier, I mean, what's the brand of Oregon State and what's it known for, right? What are your strongest schools or what are your strongest, do you have certain scholars of a certain kind or whatever? And then can you kind of tailor trips for those interests? I would think there'd be something there. Again, you want to, you know, you need to talk to people, you need to go research and whatnot. But I would think there would be, that makes my affinity, as Al was just talking, stronger, right? Just that I went to Oregon State and I'm going to go travel, I don't know. That doesn't mean a lot to me. There's people that it does, but to me, it doesn't. I need you to go deeper with me and give me a stronger reason to connect with what you're offering. So that's where I'd focus.
I'd agree 100% with Jeff. I think the edginess can come out of the product. And if there's a tie-in back to Oregon State, are you going to Italy and there's an Oregon State graduate who's at a museum there? Okay, now I have an extra reason to take this trip over other trips. And what's my compelling reason to come back again and again and again? I mean, I think that's the one thing that maybe you guys have examples. I don't know of any universities or alumni groups who are really fostering the people who are coming on the trips and having them go again and again and again. You know, I have a little plaque on my desk and it says it costs 6 times more money to get a new client than to keep an existing one. And having those clients come back once they have that strength of the affinity is great. Profiling them for the next trip is great. And then researching and finding out what they want. If, to use my prior example, if going out to an olive farm and having a dinner with the family is something that differentiates you, fantastic, show that. If you're offering bungee jumping in New Zealand, well, that's your cover. That's your marketing, because that's going to stand out. And the university can't say much because that's the product. Now, I don't know if that appeals to your alumni group. But cooking classes do. It's that part that says, you know, we never want to be, as much as there's a misconception about ad agencies who always want to be edgy, we first want to be successful. And so can we be edgy with this audience? What's the audience think is edgy? Might not be what we think is edgy. It might be that dinner in the olive farm is edgy for them. So I think it's a little bit of that research and finding out. And so much of it is with the photography too. What Jeff showed with the bear on the street, that breaks the mold. That's not what I expected. So that type of stuff I think works. I'm sorry, you had a second question too. Sorry. Okay.
Are there other questions? Over here in the back.
Hi, Alan Gilboa, Explority. What's your take? I know you sort of mentioned user-generated content, but what's your take on using technology to really drive that story from the experience of the tour operator, the planner, and then, you know, sharing that with their close family and friends that might be willing to take a trip in the future?
Can you also say just really quickly what Explority is?
Sure. So, Explority is a web and mobile platform that enables tour operators and planners to coordinate their group experience, to coordinate and deliver it. And then basically it sort of alludes to what I'm asking, though, but using technology to deliver that story then to the participants.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, I think, if I understand the question right, I think the use of user-generated content is essential, especially when you have the affinity group. If a lot of people from my university went on a trip and I see those people in video, I actually look at those videos and those photos to see if there's anybody I know. So I think that's one of the best things. One case study that we did years ago was we worked with a tour operator in the Galapagos. And now you might say, and we were talking about CRM. Now, they would all sit there and say, you know, the reality is for the Galapagos, our repeat visitation is probably about 0.001. So why are we sending something to somebody who just went on a Galapagos cruise? Easy, because their 5 closest friends are probably your audience. And so we literally, during the cruise, would take a photograph. And now I have to deviate for one little story because it's a Missouri story, if I could. So I grew up here, too, and we used to go in the summers to the Lake of the Ozarks to a little place called Kirkwood Lodge. Anybody know it? No. It's a little hole in the wall, knotty pine places. You know, everything's on the honor system. Every morning we'd, you know, get up and go water skiing, then fishing, and then water skiing. And then every night, square dancing. Very proud of that. So I moved to California, and we come back one time. And we go down to this Kirkwood Lodge. And the first thing they do when you get there is they took a Polaroid picture of you. For your young people in the audience, that's a little piece of thing that came out of the camera. It was a picture of you. And they'd put it on a board. Oops, they'd put it on a board and put your name underneath it and where you were from. So everybody got to meet everybody very quickly. And a lot of friendships grew out of that. It was fantastic.
Early Facebook, right?
It was early Facebook. So we're there for a week. We all have a great time square dancing, meeting everybody. And we're leaving, and we're paying the check, and the guy doesn't give us the photo. And of course, I think I'm a marketing guru, and I'm wondering, why would he miss this opportunity to give us the photo? Just a shame. Come Christmas, we all got a Christmas card from Kirkwood Lodge. And you opened it up, and there was the photo. Hope your holiday was as much fun as your holiday was at Kirkwood Lodge in the summer. And I think, okay, that's good. That's really good. 3 weeks later, second week of January, we all get a letter that says, you had such a good time last August at Kirkwood Lodge, and you met so many people. That was the week of August 5th. To come back this year and meet those same friends, it would be August 7th through 18th. So please send your deposit in the next few weeks so we can make sure that you get the same cabin and see all your friends again. My family suckered in for this for about 9 years. I went to the general manager when I went down, Skip, who was also the caller for square dancing. And I said, Skip, I got to give you credit. How this is a fantastic idea. Tell me about how it works. And he says, we take the photo down. We literally put it in the Christmas card as we take it down. And we put the letter. And we do everything right when you're leaving. Within an hour of you leaving, we have everything set up. And we know December 12th to mail it. We know January 2nd to mail this, and this, and this, and that. And I said, what's your occupancy? And he said, 96% for the 6 months we're open in the summer. And I said, that's amazing. And he said, yeah, I got to work at that 4%. So the interesting thing to me was always, it was brilliant marketing. He was, A, going right after his same audience. They already knew the piece of mail was coming. There was a heightened awareness of it, and it went on. Fast forward that to the Galapagos. What did we do? While they were on the ship, we took photographs. 2 weeks when they got back, we sent them photographs, professional photographs of the Galapagos, and photographs of them and their family on the ship, all with a watermark of the URL for the ship. And said, hope you enjoy this. Please feel free to post this and share it with their friends. So what did they do? They shared it with all their friends and, of course, got a friends and family rate to go on the ship. So sometimes your audience, through user-generated content, spreads that word and gives that other consumer the confidence that they didn't have before because they know somebody who went on that trip. So to me, using that is the quickest, easiest way to use the user-generated content and not only keep your client, if you can get repeat, but expand the clientele.
So I love that story because it's the offline version, you know, that's very low-tech with the mailing, and the online version that is equally simple. And I think we're always looking for those easy, simple, inexpensive, low-staff time ways to do things, and that one is kind of a no-brainer. I saw you taking a lot of notes, Catherine, so I wondered if you had something to say to that topic.
Well, like social media, we have a love-hate relationship with user-generated content. We do a lot of user-generated content, and there are a couple of caveats that I want to mention. One is, what we do every year is we do a whole issue on what did I do on my summer vacation. So from the 30th of May until Labor Day weekend, take all the pictures you want, send us your best shot. If it's really good, we'll put it in print, we'll run it online. And we get overwhelmed with submissions. We get thousands and thousands of photos. We go through, we evaluate them. So there are a couple of great truths in this. One of them is people sometimes don't know where they are, and yet they think they do. So they will tell us, oh, we were in this place in Bulgaria, and it turns out to be Romania. So we've had to run some fairly embarrassing corrections on this. You know, everybody makes a mistake. It's just that when it's in print, it's forever. So that's one caveat. And the second thing is people lie. They say, oh, yes, I took this great photo. And it turns out they didn't. They actually ripped it off from somewhere else. We've seen a few cases like that, and that's scary. And the third thing is, I know I said two, but I wanted to sneak another one, is We did several years ago something that our marketing department thought was a great idea, and it was, except we forgot to say, look, there are copyright laws that will prevent you from using a video that has copyrighted music in it. You can get away with that on YouTube. You cannot get away with it on a third-party site like ours, because we don't have any kind of agreement with YouTube. So we got flooded with videos, and they were just brilliant, and they were full of copyrighted music, and we could not use a one of them. So just keep those things in mind as you're trying this. You know, it's probably 1% of what's happened, but the 1% makes about 50% of this gray hair that I have now, because it really is harder. And Lauren, I want to quibble with you a little bit. You said, you know, it is not high, it doesn't take you a lot of staff time. These things take us longer than any other thing that we do.
Just so because it's important to think it through before you do it.
Yes,
and also
unintended.
Talk to experts and colleagues about key learnings, because maybe you haven't thought about the copyright issue of the music. Yeah, very good point. Do we have other questions? I see, okay, we've got three. We might have, if we keep our answers quick, we might have time to get all three.
Hi, my name is Jim Cackley, and I'm from Thompson Family Adventures. I'm wondering if you guys could speak to the struggle that we have as a tour operator, where we are asked to put out 5,000 to 10,000 four-color pieces, selling one product, one date, and it's a bit like throwing $5,000 to $7,000 on the table and gambling it, and often it's not a good gamble. And it's the old model that we've used in this industry, and it doesn't always have a great success rate. So maybe you can give us some secret sauce to fix that.
Deep breaths from all the panelists.
It is difficult. I think to sell one trip, it makes it more difficult. I think part of this is a sales question more than a marketing question, too, of your negotiations. I do know this, for an example, from the printing side of things and the production side of things, lining up enough people who sell the same trip is the key to cutting your cost. I can just give you an example. As I mentioned, we work with Signature Travel Network. We do 100 different direct mail pieces a year for them. They have a network of over 400 agencies. Every one of those pieces that goes out is branded from that agency. So 5,000 come from ABC Travel, 5,000 come from XYZ Travel, and so on. But we print one time, and then we overprint all the information for that one agency during that printing. That saves an immense amount of money during the printing process. So I know sometimes if you have one trip and you can sell it to 5 different universities or 7 different universities or whatever it happens to be, that's one way to cut cost if you can do it. The other is an old expression, print for the worst scenario, mail for the best scenario. It's really cheap to just keep your finger on the press and do twice as many as you need, even if they're blank, and then you can overprint for a specific school. But that way you have a lot, and then you can parcel them out as you need them. That helps.
I would also say talk to your destination partners about whether there's co-op money available to you. Because I can't tell you that so many times in this market, people do not come to me and ask for co-op money to help with preparation of brochures or special mailings. They don't think about it, even with my good partners. But a lot of times we as destinations have funding to help support your brochure program. So think about that as an option. Okay, there was a question, a second question somewhere in the middle here. There's one back there. Okay, you're ready to go.
L'Oreal Penny, Worldwide Quest, Toronto. You've talked about the value of research and getting to know your constituency and your community. Do you have any suggestions for the most, or what are the most effective ways of researching when you have limited resources to do that?
You can get a lot just by asking, SurveyMonkey, right? I mean, you have to be smart, I think, about the way you ask the questions and who it's going to, but research is like a lot of media. I mean, the cost of it has just plummeted because there's things out there. You know, you can put little questions out on Facebook. pull, you know, depending on your situation. I mean, if I were a planner, I'd find, you know, 10 alumni and put them in a room and just start asking them questions, not just the ones who do travel with you, but who doesn't travel with you. I think you can do a lot of focus group type stuff, and it's focus groups, it's the qualitative research that's going to get to the why, not the quantitative. Quantitative doesn't usually get to the why, and quantitative is way more expensive usually, at least to get, you know, the numbers you need and to do it all scientific and everything. But you can do a lot of qualitative research pretty inexpensively, I think.
I agree 100%. I mean, we use SurveyMonkey for tour operators specifically, where they can go out with different cover options. They can go out with different, you know, do you want to see yourself, people in the destination? Do you just want to see the locals in the destination? Do you want to do this? You can put all sorts of options out. You can put photos on SurveyMonkey. You can put video on SurveyMonkey. You can test it over and over again and get the results. What do they want? What other, I think, as Jeff said, what other trips are they taking? I was at a USTOA conference, and there were some of the big tour operators, the Globuses and the Trafalgars, and they were talking about their repeat. One guy said, oh, we have a 65% repeat. Another tour operator said, we have a 72% repeat. I think Talc or somebody said, oh, we're at 81%. And one of the guys said, you know, the problem is we all think we have this great repeat, but it's really Bob and Mary. And they've taken a Globus, and then 6 months later they've taken a Trafalgar, and 6 months later they've taken a Talc, and then they go back to Globus, and then they go back to Talc. And we think we have this loyal following, and they switch tour operators because you left on a Tuesday and I left on a Monday, and they only could use their airline points on the Tuesday, and that's the trip they picked. So the more research you find out about what else they're doing, I think that more helpful it is too, and in developing product too.
Does that help answer your question?
Yep.
Okay, did we have a third? I thought there was a third question. Yes, you. There you are. The mic's coming.
Okay. I'm Jenna from the Wisconsin Alumni Association. We are a team of 1.5 with a limited marketing budget. I loved the idea of the magazines, but we would never be able to have the budget for that. But the simple story about the photo and the Christmas cards, those are the type of ideas that we're looking for. So I was wondering if you had any other examples of small, low time but high impact little things that we could do for our travelers.
Just quickly, you don't have a 1.5 team. You have about 5,000 people who can help. They're just the students. And go right to the marketing department and grab two or three of them for interns tomorrow. They'll teach you more about social media than you thought you knew, and then some. And to get these guys who are interested in travel, we take 5 interns every semester, and they clamor over working for free for us to the point I almost feel guilty. Not that guilty. But they've all worked overseas. They've gone to school overseas. They love the idea of travel and doing something for travel for the school. You'll find they'll write stories, they'll do blogs, they'll do everything for you. So you've got a lot of people right there. You just need to tap them for a lot of the stuff. You can direct them, but I think it's surprising. And whoops, I was in academia, and I taught and everything else. They're ready, they're eager, and they'll learn. And it's especially on social and everything now, they'll champion for you.
I just wanted to give Jeff a last minute to say something because he's got to shoot off a little early. We do still have a couple of minutes left, but I know you have to go.
Yeah, my apologies. I have to go. I have to be at the airport in 20 minutes, so that's why I've been looking at my watch. I just thank you for coming to this session. And I didn't put my details on the board, but you can, if you got a follow-up question, you want to email me, you can find me on my website, on our website. And I'd be happy to follow up with that, and I can give your question some thought, too. I totally agree. Interns are a great way to go, and if you gave me 5 minutes, I'd come up with a couple answers to your question. So
you have an invitation from Jeff to call and email him.
Yeah, that's right.
And get 5 minutes. Okay, so thank you so much, Jeff.
All right, thank
travels.
You all, and carry on.
We're going to keep going. I want to give Catherine a chance to answer that last question, too, because I think working with the media can really be an advantageous, inexpensive way to leverage a small staff and a small budget as well. So I thought you might have some examples.
I actually kind of want to go off topic a little bit, and I don't know if I can tell the story without getting fairly emotional, because this was very touching. This happened several years ago. The Los Angeles Times had for many years a standalone travel show. In 2011, one of our sponsors was the Japan National Tourism Organization. JNTO has always been a supporter of ours. We've been a supporter of theirs. Unfortunately, the weekend before the show was the Fukushima disaster. And they were supposed to be there. And I thought, this is going to be awful. There's going to be this big blank space here in the middle of our show floor. But they were there. And what they were was a group of women in traditional kimonos. And they sat there. And all day long, they folded origami cranes. And they had little donation baskets there for people who were affected by the Fukushima disaster. They never said anything except thank you. And so when I've had to come up with a creative solution when I don't have resources, and we don't have a lot of resources. You have 1.5, I have 3.5. When I've been in a bind, I think to myself, what is my origami crane? Because that engendered more compassion, more goodwill that's lasted beyond that as Japan has continued to try to recover from Fukushima. What is your origami crane?
That's great, thank you. Such a moving story. I really am dying to hear if there's one more question, but I feel like I should be responsible and let us wrap up now. But I imagine our panelists might be around for a few minutes afterwards if people have individual questions. And I want to also remind you that these are taken very seriously, but only if you say really good things about each of us. So please do fill them out. And we have a monitor at the door there who's collecting them. They're very important for our programming, so anything you want to hear more of, anything you like, didn't like, be as honest as you can. Thank you all so much, and we look forward to seeing you at the next sessions this afternoon and tomorrow.
Yep.
Thank you.
And thank you to our panelists.